Hello, hello. I'm Peter Medlin, and you are listening to Teacher's Lounge. And if this is your first time hearing our show, I've got great news for you. It's a really simple idea that we've all had teachers in our lives who helped us become who we are today. And every educator we have on this podcast, whether teacher, coach, or professor, is nominated by the folks who listen. We want you to be a part of the show, so please do consider telling us about the educators who've inspired you or the folks in your community who deserve a spotlight. You can email us with your nominations and your story ideas at teachersLounge@niu.edu. This week, it's our conversation with Julie Carballo. She's the Assistant Dean of Students for First Generation and Military Affiliated Initiatives at North Central College. She's also the founding director of Cardinal First, the college's award-winning program for first-generation college students. And I got to talk with Julie about helping students maneuver their college experience from the first day on campus all the way to the graduation stage. And honestly, it was also extra special for me to head to North Central to talk with Julie because I am a North Central alum, so it's always fun to come back. And of course, in the hour and a half that I was there, I ran into like four people that I knew, which happens. But it was a great conversation with Julie and a perspective we don't hear often enough. Now, before our conversation with Julie, I have a few other education stories we want to share. The Illinois Education Association released the results of its annual State of Education survey, and we've got more on what Illinois residents had to say. The poll surveyed 1,000 Illinois residents. Illinois Education Association President Al Lorenz said that respondents graded public schools in their community higher than public schools in the state as a whole or in the country.
What I see is that people that are experiencing what teachers are doing in their community and how they're impacting their kids is more solid data than what they're hearing about in other places.
The words they associated most with Illinois teachers were underpaid and overworked. Just under 60% of residents said that public school teachers in their community are paid too little, and that was a 9% increase compared to last year's survey. Two-thirds said they believe teaching has gotten harder over the past few years. The poll was conducted by Next Generation Strategies and Normington Pets. And across the country, including here in Illinois, certain teaching positions have become harder and harder to staff. And I got to report on a shortage that often feels invisible: vision teachers. Jen Perkins weaves through the hallway at the Northwestern Illinois Association, or NIA's, office. It's a special education co-op that provides services for students in 70 school districts across 10 counties in northern Illinois. They serve students with visual, hearing, physical, or multiple disabilities. Perkins is a vision itinerant teacher, which means she drives around to multiple school districts across northern Illinois, from West Aurora to Sandwich, to assist students with visual disabilities. Back at NIA, she drops into an office to pass an ocular report off to another teacher. She had the student last year, but now, because they have to shuffle staff when they get more students, she doesn't teach at that school anymore. Perkins glances at a large print calculus textbook on the desk and notices that the print isn't actually all that large.
These are things that my students would have a real challenge looking at, especially things like exponents and these little dots and this light blue. Who made this? I'm writing a letter.
She has around 30 kids on her caseload this year, from 3 years old to 22. The students have a wide range of needs depending on their vision. Some kids are completely blind, though most aren't, but they all have visual impairments that impede their access to education. Because of her packed schedule, she has to squish this planning and prep time at the office in whenever she can. It's where she sorts paperwork, like those ocular reports, and builds lessons for her students. On top of that, she travels to other schools to do IEP evaluations and to some homes for early intervention services.
The big project at the beginning of the year is everyone gets their caseload and sits down and maps out their schools and figures out, all right, when do I have to be where? And it's like a puzzle.
Jean Deptola is an assistant coordinator of the Vision Asian department at NIA, and she says that over the years, the sorts of students they serve have changed. It used to be more focused on blind students or those with severe physical issues with their eyes, and now they're seeing more and more kids with impairments within their visual pathway.
The number of children that we are identifying that have vision disabilities that impact their ability to access their curriculum has just exploded because we're better at finding them.
Deptola says just because they're helping more students doesn't mean they've also increased the number of vision teachers. She says there's a severe shortage of vision teachers, not just in Illinois, but throughout the country.
There are teachers in other states that are serving 50, 60 kids and driving the entire state. We're a little bit luckier in Illinois, but we don't have enough teachers to serve kids.
In Illinois, vision teachers like Perkins say the shortage gets worse as you get further downstate.
They need people so bad, and I know that positions go unfilled.
And even though they're a bit luckier in northern Illinois, it doesn't mean staffing is sufficient. Deptola says they're identifying new students all the time. They can't find them fast enough, and they're still identifying some kids late because of the pandemic. They have enough teachers right now, but that could change any day.
And we're cutting it really close this year. I'm a little concerned.
Next year, she says she needs to hire at least two or three more teachers, but there just aren't any.
I have a little one who's turning 3 in another school district. She's totally blind. She is ready to read Braille. She is already looking for the Braille on the page. And I don't have a vision teacher for her. And I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do because there aren't enough people.
And Perkins knows what happens when teachers like her are stretched too thin.
We will shift around. Nobody will get everything that they need, but everyone will get a little something.
A big part of the problem is that in Illinois, there are only two main programs for people who want to become vision teachers. There's one at Illinois State University and one at Northern Illinois University. Dr. Stacy Kelly is a professor in the visual disabilities program at NIU.
You're actually talking about a crisis. You really are. There are children who are blind or visually impaired all over the United States, including within Illinois, who do not have a teacher who's qualified to teach them.
These programs search the whole country to find students. And because not many people know someone with a visual disability, Deptola says the shortage feels invisible.
You would never put 45 kids in a first grade classroom. Parents would be barreling down the doors if you asked one first grade teacher to serve 45 kids. Yet that is common.
And again, students have a wide range of needs. A teacher can have just 2 kids on their caseload if they're blind and need Braille support. Jen Perkins can live with 30 kids on hers because she may just be ensuring a student is getting accommodations and only actively working on visual skills with some kids. And whether it's securing an actual large print book or working on vision and motor skills, educators like Perkins will keep driving across multiple counties to serve as many kids as they can, even if they don't have enough teachers. Because, as she says, if not her, then who? But they all say they simply can't provide the best education possible when teachers are extremely overextended. Still, they're going to keep going because they believe every kid, no matter their disability, deserves an accessible education. All right, now it's time for my conversation with Cardinal First Director Julie Carballo. And we start off, because North Central is my alma mater, if you'd please indulge me with some light reminiscing about my college experience, and then we can move on to talk about the nationally recognized program that she runs.
I was thinking a lot about this over the past couple days because, you know, we're at North Central, which It's, first of all, it's wild that we've been doing this show for 4.5 years and somehow you are the first North Central person that's been on the show, which seems long overdue, which is fantastic. I'm glad that we finally made that happen. But so I went to North Central. I was a transfer student here, so I went here for the last 2 years. And I think about like that time as like such a, you know, like important time and like both, you know, shaping who I am and like setting the course for my professional life too. But when I think back, it seems like this huge thing, but I was really here for like 1.5 years. And I know you do a lot of work with transfer students too, but the more I think about it, the more I think about like how much was fit into this super, super tight window. And it just blows my mind how just that it was like, yeah, I was here for like 18 months.
And it seems like you got a lot of great experiences, though. You got connected to relevant opportunities outside of the classroom and connected to professors that were in your field, which is very important. Sometimes students don't understand the value of that.
Yeah, and it's like a really hard thing because you're like, mm-hmm. trying to make sure you've got the credits you can to graduate and everything. And then you're like, yeah, you actually do need to like take some time and try to connect with people, try to have those relationships in place, which I'm sure you guys are always trying to like help out too with, you know, connections for obviously transfer students. And I know first generation students is your huge, your main focus probably, is it fair to say?
We try to provide a community and connections and help them understand the value of those connections. I just was talking to a student who thinks he might want to be a physical therapist, but doesn't know. And so we talked about, let's get you set up to go job shadow with somebody and talk to someone who's in the field. And one of our former first gen students who's now in his last year of PT school, so that they can learn from and hear from students who are a year or two ahead of them on the journey to this similar career path.
Right. And so like I mentioned, like first generation college students, you guys have the Cardinal First program, which you are ahead of. How long has the program been around? Has it been around for a long time? Or
Cardinal First launched in 2014. So we actually are celebrating 10 years of Cardinal First.
Perfect timing. Look at that.
Talking about, so we launched it in 2014. It was 2012 when the college first began collecting first gen status on the application for admission by inquiring about parents' highest education level. And then the college's initial first-gen program is Teach First, which was started in 2008. Mm-hmm. And that was for education majors only, so first-gen education majors. And it was started with a grant from the Council of Independent Colleges. And I became involved 2 years after it started. They asked me if I would be the director of it. And at that time, I was a half-time faculty member in the Department of Education.
And so it seems like it has, the program has evolved a bit over the past 10 years then.
Yes. So then in 2014, the college decided to create a full-time position for a director of first-generation programs and approached me to see if I would develop a program for all first-gen students at the college after we discovered that we were consistently between 35 and 40% of our students identifying as first-generation college students, which we define as neither parent having completed a four-year college degree.
Is that what about it is now to about 40% of students? Or
we're at about, I think we're at 36% this year when we started, and the percentage among transfer students is usually a little bit higher, but yes, we've been pretty consistently between 35 and 40% of our students identify as first generation.
If you do a bunch of events, different engagement opportunities, like what does a typical week look like for you? Is it very different depending on what you have going on with Cardinal First? Or
I would look at it more like, I'll talk about a typical month. So Cardinal First offers cohort-based programming for first-gen students from their first day on campus through graduation. And whether they come here as a first-year, first-time in college student, or they come here as a transfer student. So we provide monthly one-hour workshops that have the first 20 minutes is food and fellowship time, get connected to other people.
Food
and
is then, always a great place to start with it,
And then 40 minutes of content, whatever developmentally appropriate content. So with the first years, we work on managing your time, which is really managing yourself and understanding what, you know, what are the demands of being a new college student. We talk about building relationships across campus with peers and with faculty, talk about preparing for final exams, whatever is developmentally appropriate. And then with our sophomores, once a month, we have a Cardinal First sophomore supper. So those are 1 hour, and we have 12 faculty, first-gen faculty or staff, come and serve as table hosts. So each one of the tables has a first-gen faculty or staff member plus 9 or 10 sophomores at it. And the intent of that is to get students connected to the faculty. And there is some research that shows that first-generation college students are less likely to engage with faculty outside of the classroom. Mm-hmm. So this is an opportunity to build those relationships and for the faculty member to share a little bit of their first-gen story. And then we similarly at the workshops for senior or for juniors are called Cardinal First Penultimate. Those are one Wednesday a month, but offered at 5 consecutive times. So a student can find something works for their schedule with them. We'll be meeting with them on Wednesday, and we're going to be collaborating with our Center for Career and Professional Development on workshops about making the most of that summer after your junior year.
Internships.
Anything related to their career. So because we talk to the students about when they go to apply for a professional job, every applicant it will have a bachelor's degree because it'll be a requirement of the job, and that employers want to see some experience outside of the classroom, whether that be undergraduate research, internship, or work related to that. And then for seniors, the program is called Cardinal First Home Stretch. Again, once a month workshops. So we're working with them on preparing for life after graduation. So this month we'll be on leveraging their LinkedIn profile. We have a workshop coming up in February on finding community and connection after college, because it's a little bit different when there's not 70 student organizations.
For the first time in your life, you're not surrounded by a couple hundred other people who are exactly your age.
It's a big adjustment. And that workshop topic came about as a result of student suggestions saying that they would like that. And then the last workshop we always do for the graduating seniors is managing your finances, including your loans after graduation. And we collaborate with our Center for Financial Literacy for that one.
You know, I always think it's so interesting. I was reading an article, I think, that you wrote about this, where you were mentioning that, you know, at some schools, first-generation programs are just, like, first-year focused, mm-hmm. or even just, like, kind of the first week or first few days being like, all right, get you set up and then off on your way. And so much of it is like, yeah, we'll just, like, help you feel comfortable in a new place and then let you loose. But it totally makes sense for it to be longer. And I think so much about, like, you know, at the K through 12 level, even, like, there's a lot of focus on, like, things like, you know, like freshman on track, which, like, you know, like, by definition is like, we focus on you in your first year, make sure you're on track, and then let you loose. But, you know, it's a lot more of a commitment to be like, we're going to try to help you through all 4 years. That's way more of a commitment than just like, we'll make sure you're doing all right and then see you later in 4 years, right?
We do try to, we do think it's important to provide the community and the connection throughout their throughout their entire experience. And then we do try to get them connected to the plentiful resources and opportunities that are available here. But in fact, this morning I just had a conversation with a student about, have you considered being an RA for next year? Because if you want to be an RA next year, those applications are due this month. Mm-hmm. And so to let them understand like why you might want to consider that the timeline, because many times, you know, especially first year students, it takes them a while to get in the habit of reading the information that is being sent to them and understanding when the deadlines are and things like that. So just making sure I view myself as a connector of connecting the students to people to build their social capital and connecting the students to the opportunities that will build their leadership skills or let them explore a career a little bit more or something like that.
Right. And with first generation students, there's a lot of people that just don't fully know how the college works in something like whether it be deadlines or things like that, that, you know, to try to make sure you want to be an RA. Might not even know the right questions to ask or who exactly to talk to get that process started.
Yes, and there's so much information the first year that, you know, students are adjusting to. And I started my career teaching at the high school level mm-hmm. with most of those years at Argo High School over by Midway Airport. So that really informs my work because I know, and my education and training is in secondary ed. So I know very well the developmental milestones that high school students go through and what is needed then to transition successfully to college because, you know, the academic demands increase, the level of responsibility increases quite a bit. If a student is living on campus, there's nobody reminding them to say like, hey, you might want to get off of TikTok and do some homework for a while or something like that.
Yeah.
And I know I also have three younger adult children that I've navigated the college transition process with you know, different personalities and different challenges that which transitions in life come with, you know, just like transitioning to a new job or a new city. There's transitions take some time to go through the acclimation process. So we try to anticipate what some of those needs are and build some skills around that and get them connected to resources.
Right. And, you know, the big part of that is retention, right? Like you want to make sure that the first generation students that come here are going to stay here. I'm assuming obviously that the 4 year focus of that is a big part of, you know, trying to make sure that you keep students around. I assume that keeping it, like, how do you guys think about keeping it relevant, you know, as a student's in their second or third or fourth year? It makes sense when you were talking about when you're in your fourth year to be thinking about LinkedIn and community, and in your third year thinking about internships and starting to peek forward to post-graduation life. But it must be a challenge to keep things super relevant, you know, over the course of the 4-year journey when, again, like once you're settled in and once you're in school, there's so much academic or otherwise that is vying for your attention at any moment.
Yes, that's definitely true. And retention is a goal of the program, but really for me, it's about helping students achieve their goal of earning a college degree.
Yeah.
And because there's many people across the country, the statistics on students that start college and don't finish. And so I use the mantra, there's a solution to every problem. I can't read your mind. Tell me what your obstacles are. You know, let me know so we can help you. So we try to watch closely. We survey the students to see what's one challenge you're facing. So, for example, this Wednesday, we're going to see 150 first-gen juniors at Cardinal First Penultimate Workshops. And we sent out the RSVP link over the weekend, and we asked them, what's one thing going well for you right now to focus on growth mindset, and what's one challenge you're facing? And then we also this time asked, tell us two things about yourself that we probably don't know that you'd like us to know. So that helps us like get a pulse of what the concerns are, what students are facing, and then we can build stress management is always one of them, time management. So we try to build in those types of strategies into each workshop to just help students, something will land with them about, you know, we teach the Pomodoro study technique as our productivity technique to help increase their focus when they're studying and just different skills like that. And we do a lot of stress management, gratitude to help with mindset and things like that. So paying close attention to what their needs are and what they're expressed. Sometimes they know what their needs are, sometimes they don't. So as somebody who's, you know, worked at a college for a long time, I try to anticipate what some of those. But this morning I just spoke to our new graduate students in the Physician Assistant Studies program that just started. And I think approximately half of that cohort identifies as first generation. But I always tell all the students I work with, your questions help us do better work. So please let us know what's on your mind and what obstacles you're running into, what concerns you have, because it helps us know how to better, you know, effectively support you on your journey. We tell them that we're the guide on the side to keep them moving forward on the path to the graduation stage.
Guide on the side. Yep. There you go. Yeah. I wanted to ask again, so we have one that's about challenges, but one that is about, you know, good things that are happening too. I would be curious when students, especially in their first year, their freshman year, are coming into the program, they're starting off, what the most common questions or challenges that you guys get in Cardinal First. I'm sure a lot of it is that time management and stress management piece. And then after that, I was curious about some of your favorite either topics or events that you guys got to do. I know you mentioned one before we started recording about an event that you guys started last year, 2 years ago?
2 years ago.
2 years ago that you've got going on pretty soon. But yeah, back to the original one, which is like, yeah, what are the most common things that you guys get asked early on in someone's journey?
Sometimes there aren't as many questions during the first year, but as we're what we're observing is the time management piece.
Right,
so every student loves the change from high school to college that you're only in class, you know, 15 to 18 hours a week versus 35 hours a week when you were in high school. And when you were in high school, a bell rings and tells you where to go and what to think about, what subject to think about each hour of the day. And so the freedom that comes with that, students really, really, really enjoy that. And so one of the things we do with the first years in the first couple workshops is talk about time robbers and said that everybody has, we all have time robbers. It's things that take up more time in our day or week than we expect them to, than we
Maybe
want them
TikTok
to.
Maybe TikTok sometimes, yeah.
But yes, and we identify napping. Just, you know, one student said, I went down the hall to borrow a stapler and took me 90 minutes to get back to my room.
Yeah.
So, you know, socializing, napping, social media, gaming, whatever it is. So we talk about how to rein that in. And we have an activity where we look at how they spend the 168 hours in their week. So we all get the same 168 hours in a week. And then we go through and have them sort of estimate how much time they spend on different things. And then we look at the classes that they're taking. And on average, you want to put in 2 to 3 hours a week, 2 to 3 hours studying per hour that you're in class. So we help them figure out, does that balance to 168? And if not, where can they, you know, where can they carve out some time to make sure that their goal is, they're prioritizing being a successful college student. So we talk about that a lot, that your goal right now is to be a successful college student. So that means you might need to tell your boss at work that you can't work an extra shift, even though somebody called in sick or something like that. So we talk a lot about, if your goal is to graduate from college, then your goal, then your primary responsibility right now is to be a successful college student. Now, there are many students that have to work more hours than they would like to, mm-hmm. as part of their reality to, you know, to be in college. But so that's one of the ones, is the time management effective. So we also do a workshop with the first years in the fall on study smarter, not harder.
This seems like it might be helpful for me too.
Many students say, you know, like we talk about active studying versus passive studying, mm-hmm. and go over some of that. And a lot of this is reinforced in their classes,
right.
as well, or taught in their classes. So that's one of the other ones. And then managing the financial piece, managing family responsibilities. Sometimes families, if they look at a student's schedule, think that, well, they have plenty of time to work or to help us out because they're only in class 15 hours a week. And so to help them, you know, communicate what their experience is and what their needs are with their family and what the time commitment is to be a successful college student. So those would be the ones. And then finding your people during your first semester as a new student in a new community, yeah. that takes some time, you know, because I remember my own daughter saying, after 2 days, I haven't met anybody like my friends from high school, you know, and then a month, you know, it just transitions take time. And so that also about getting to know people, how to get involved. So you get to know people on campus and finding things that are of interest to you is one of the other ones, to helping students get connected. And sometimes that's more challenging for commuter students. Mm-hmm. And so talking to them about opportunities to get involved, you know, and staying on campus a little bit more time. So those would be what I would say with the first years, and also with the first gen transfer students, the finding your people, getting connected to resources and opportunities on campus. And another thing we work on a lot with the students in the program is successful students seek help. It's not a sign of weakness, you know, successful students, yeah. seek help. So there's a writing center, there's a speaking center, there's a math resource center, there's a language center, that are all here. And I will sometimes ask the students, how much does it cost for you to go to the Writing Center? And they'll say, it's free. And I'll say, it's included. So it's, yeah. we know that's a valuable service, that, so it's provided for you. So, you know, take advantage. And everybody can improve their writing. Everybody can improve their speaking. So
see, that's just like a classic student. And like, I totally feel this mindset too, for like minimizing what my problems are, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, I'm getting B's. What do I need to go to the Writing Center for? And it's like, well, you know that you can get an A, you know? Like, you don't have to be in a place where you're like, I actually don't need to be failing in order to require, yes. or need, or even just to use help. You can just always do better. That's just but that's a tough mindset to get into sometimes when you're head down in your classes.
Yes, and sometimes people think, I can do it on my own. I'll figure it out. I'm able to do this. But yeah, that's exactly right. We talk to them about that. Students going to the Writing Center are not trying to get from an F to a C. They're yeah. trying to get from a B+ to a B and an A- to an A. And more importantly, they're learning. They want to develop skills.
Right. Don't wait for the catastrophe yes. before you seek help. You can do it beforehand, but yeah.
and you know, there's just readily available, like across North Central College for sure, and all campuses have these resources available, knowing their value for students. And so it's just important to help students see the value and to get them to avail themselves of these.
Right, and to help them see yes. those resources yes. too. I yes. think that's something that you hear a lot from people across campuses, right, is that we have all these wonderful resources available, but for some reason it feels like nobody knows about them.
Yes, I think, and the courses also try to pitch them, so I yeah. think they're getting them. But many students will say, like, today's the first day of our second semester, and so I just talked to a student.
We've got kids in backpacks yes. walking across the sidewalk in the background as we speak.
And they're all back. But I was just talking to a first year, and he said, I know what I need to do differently this semester. And I said, that's what it's all about. You regroup. You know, that's one of the nice things about being you get a fresh start in the semester. Mm-hmm. And many things about the first semester, you live through learned experience. Like, no matter how many times somebody tells you, you should be protecting your sleep, or you should be putting in this many hours. And then the students, you know, you live and learn like all of us do through each new experience, and you get reset up for the next semester. And we have planner calendars, Cardinal First planner calendars that we give out, and we tell the students, plan for success. It doesn't just happen. Like, get a plan in place. So they've been coming by to pick those up today.
It's got to be fascinating for you as someone that sees students every year starting off on, you know, a similar journey, a similar story, right? They're coming in, first generation college students, same college, and you've been at the college for a long time, where in their first semester especially, where, you know, they're experiencing some kind of, you know, not even necessarily a problem, but a challenge, and they're like trying to get help for it. And you're like, I have literally seen this 100 times, but you're like, I can't make you do it, but like, I can definitely show you what's helped in the past, right? Where you're just like, I do know what to do because I've seen this a lot.
Yeah, so I try to use the, it seems to me, this might be an idea, it seems to me, because everybody, you know, you want to let them take ownership for it.
Yeah.
But I do very frequently say, you're not the first person experiencing this.
Yeah.
Like I said that again to somebody I was talking to this morning as well, too, who was sharing about a challenge. And I said, I'm sorry you're dealing with that challenge, and you're not the first person. You'll get over that hurdle. You know, you'll move forward. So we talk a lot about facing the hurdles, too, mm-hmm. because it's sometimes people hit an obstacle and then they think, oh, I don't belong here. This isn't for me. I had a student say, I always thought I was college material, but maybe I'm not. And just, you know, like the imposter phenomenon,
right,
or doubt. Yeah. And I like when a student voices that so that I can have the
right.
conversation, and we try to talk about what that is and how people feel like that. And we have about 140 plus faculty and staff on this campus who were first generation college students. They all have signs outside their offices, and they will often share a snippet of their story. I ask them when they're at our events to share about a challenge they faced in undergrad and how they got through it. So I said, later you can tell them about your dissertation research, but right now just share what was something like, what was a challenge? Because to the first year college students, they look at these professors and think, you probably always knew you wanted to be a chemistry professor and probably sailed through all your classes. So we often, we ask the faculty to share a snippet of their first gen story, including a struggle they faced and how they worked through it, and then what they wish they would have known now, that, you know, what they know now that they wish they would have known when they were first years of sophomore. So they'll share some of that too with, I wish I would have known that professors do want you to go to office hours, you know, which
right.
we tell
yeah,
them
yeah,
repeatedly,
yeah.
But it's hard sometimes for students to, like I said, see the value. So we try to require certain things, like our first years are required to create a resume. We help them create a resume so that they have that available when scholarship
right.
or internship opportunities come along. And then by sophomore year, we have them, they need to take their resume to the Center for Career and Professional Development so they see where it is, they meet the great people over there, get their resume reviewed by them, and continue to update it. So we collaborate across campus quite a bit with
sure.
the Center for Financial Literacy, Center for Career and Professional Development, Center for Global Education for study abroad opportunities for students, with the Dyson Wellness Center.
Mm-hmm.
So we collaborate for skill building and also to get the students connected to these people to see, you know, to feel a little more comfortable accessing those services
yeah.
outside of Cardinal First.
It's so nice to have that list of professors and faculty
yes.
that are involved with the program, because I do think, and I definitely remember having this feeling, that I think intrinsically we all know that like everyone experiences challenges, but like you do feel like people that are in like, you know, positions of authority, like a college professor, it is hard at that age to not think of like, oh, well, they've just always
mm-hmm.
had it figured out. Where like intrinsically, you know that that can't possibly be true, but you still do think that sometimes. And it is nice to be able to talk to folks and be like, actually, I went through a very similar problem. Actually, this is how it goes. So that's got to be really nice to be able to connect, foster those connections.
You can almost see
campus.
The relief on the students as a professor shares, well, I didn't, you know, I failed this class my first semester of college.
Right.
And, you know, then this happened, or, you know, as they're deciding between it, like one of our current professors tells a story of, I think several of them changed majors multiple times, like 5 times before.
Yeah.
And that normalizes that experience for the students who are, you know, not exactly sure what they want to major in, which is a hard thing to decide when you're 18 years old.
Yeah. I remember having this realization early in my professional career, especially in journalism, where I'm talking to, like, again, a lot of people in authority positions or politicians, and you think that everyone is, like, going to be very put together, everyone has it figured out, and you're like, actually, most people are winging it, like, 80% of the time. Like, we're all doing our best, but, like, most people are just, like, flying by the seat of our pants and just, like, trying our best to figure things out on the fly. And you're like, you know, everyone's just trying their best, but everyone is, you know, whether it be what major or challenges they had in school, it is helpful to have those perspectives.
Yes, it is very helpful. And it is one of those things you realize each year of life a little more.
Yeah, actually, none of us have any idea what we're doing, but we're trying, I guess. That's all
yes,
you can do.
That's exactly right. I just saw some quote about that. Just do something and you're moving forward versus doing
right.
that.
like in that situation where a student comes to you and is like, I'm having this problem, vocalizes it. At that point, you're like, we're already well on our
yes.
way to a good thing. Because there's so yes. many people that don't get to that point that just, you know, keep the secret or hide that they're not doing well.
Exactly.
And I totally have friends remember people that went through those that got to the end of their first semester and were like, oh, did you know that I failed three of my classes? And I'm like, how did I not know that happened to you? We've been together all semester, but that can be really, really hard. So by the time someone's come to you and like trusted you with that and wants to, you're like, listen, we're good. We're
yes,
already on the way.
Yes, we really reinforce question asking. The team, I have associate director and two graduate assistants, but anytime someone asks a question, we say, I'm so glad you asked that question. I'm so glad you came by, because we would never want somebody to feel like, you know, that was we've already been over that, or you should know that, or something like that. So yes, the successful students seek help. We can't read your mind, so you need to tell us what's on your mind. We'll role play with them if it's a situation where they, you know, want to ask a professor or somebody on campus for something. We try to help them get connected. So yeah, we like when we encourage them to come to us. At each one of the workshops, we say, think for a minute. Do you have any questions? Please get them answered before you leave here. You know, there's no reason for you to leave here with any unanswered questions. And we
doesn't
have
cost anything.
Right.
It's included.
Right. Yeah. So, and to be thinking about, like, well, I didn't, you just ask. We can tell you whatever we know about that, or, you know, to help the student take one thing off their plate that is worrying them.
Yeah. And then any favorites, Cardinal First workshops, events that you guys do that stick out, or things that you look forward to on that calendar?
I love the programming. I mean, the best part of my job is working with the students. And so when I was a faculty member, I taught just junior and senior level courses. So I knew students for at best a year and a half maybe. And now I really like getting to know them from their first day on campus and then watching them cross the graduation stage. So we do have an event called the Cardinal First Graduation Recognition and Pinning Ceremony that started in 2016, but that takes place on commencement weekend. And each first-gen graduate is invited to select one faculty or staff member who has been an important part of their experience at North Central, and whoever they select is representative of all the people that have been an important part of their experience. But that faculty or staff member presents the graduate with a pin on stage. So it's over in the Wentz Concert Hall, and the student is recognized at the podium and then goes to the center of the stage and is presented with a Cardinal First pin from the faculty or staff member of their choosing. And there's hugs or high five or handshakes or whatever. And then the student wears that pin on the commencement gown. But and families are invited. There's so much joy in
that's
the room.
That's gotta be one of the best ones for all involved. Like
yes,
the faculty getting chosen too.
It's just such a joyous occasion. And the families, who are, you know, there's the commonality. Like I didn't complete a college degree, didn't have the opportunity to, and now all of us get to see our child, you know, achieve that goal for themselves. So it's just a great event. It's usually the day before commencement, and then they all wear those pins on their gown at commencement. So that's, and we have one of the first-gen faculty members speak at that, but that is an event I look forward to every year. It's just a one-hour event, but it's and the room is packed, and
just get the Kleenexes.
We say
stacked.
As I'm explaining how it's going to work, I say we will most definitely applaud after each graduate is recognized at the podium. Like, so that's great. That's that one I really enjoy. We do a 1 year down, three to go celebration at the end of the first year with the first years, which, and have them reflect a little bit on like, the whirlwind. My gosh, I did it. Yeah. Like, and then we do a halfway to graduation celebration with the sophomores, and they get a half mug that says halfway there. And to, again, celebrate that and reflect. And then we are doing the Alumni Academy, which is what you mentioned before. So that event was launched in 2022. The Cardinal First Alumni Academy will be doing the second one this year and on March 1st. And that is designed to connect 50 to 75 of our first-gen alumni serving as presenters, panelists, or table hosts with 150 of our current first-gen students. And it's set up like a professional conference. And so there's concurrent sessions, concurrent presentations. The students will choose which presentations they want to go to. Then there's a professional networking dinner that will be a plated dinner. So we will also build in some business dining etiquette in that. And then there's panel discussions after dinner where students can choose which group of panels that they want to go to. Like I think this year there's a group putting together a panel on where your biology degree may take you. And it's a variety of first-gen alums that are doing different things with their biology degree. And then the last part of the event is a dessert, networking and desserts. And so each table we'll have a different topic so students can go and sit at that, like working for the state government or things like that. So that event we are looking forward to. We've just had sent out the RSVP link for alums, and we already have our 75. So we've already achieved our goal of 75 first-gen alums, some coming in from out of state for it. So it's really a great networking opportunity for our current students to get connected to people that are one or two or 20 or 30 years ahead of them as a first-gen professional.
That's an affirming email that you already filled up that people are excited to come back.
Yes, it really, the first-gen alum really say, I wish somebody would have told me this. I want to make sure they know this. And these are the things that I want, and I want to connect with them. So that event I'm really looking forward to as well. And then I'm very blessed. I love my job working here, working with the students. It's I loved teaching at the high school level. But then after I had my own children, I wanted to work half time, and the high school let me, but I still had to go every day. Mm-hmm. So then I switched to this, and I love working here. So just helping students achieve their goal and of earning a college degree, which there's all kinds of research to show is, you know, life changing in many ways.
I'm glad you brought up your, you know, teaching experience and what your careers look like. I definitely wanted to get into that kind of teaching origin story for you, but I really just always admire that perspective of, and I hear this all the time from people that become teachers too, is right, this idea that like, either I didn't have a teacher and that, you know, that I really connected with and I wanted to be the teacher I never had, or I did have that person and I wanted to be that for someone else, that you guys have that alumni group that, you know, say, I wish I would have had this.
Yes.
But then to take it a step further and be like, actually, I think I kind of can try to help be that, which is, that's a really nice instinct to have. But yeah, teacher origin story. Wanted to ask a little bit about that. You've taught at the K through 12 level, hit the higher ed level, administration now. Is teaching always something that you wanted to do since you were a kid, or was it something that came to you a little bit later on? What happened?
I did always like teaching. And thought that I wanted to be a teacher. I loved school as a child. I loved all my teachers. I loved the student teachers. I would cry when the student teachers would leave. So I had a very positive experience in school, and I was fortunate that my learning style matched the way my teachers taught. But I became aware as I watching other students working as hard as everybody else and having a harder time learning. And so I sort of organically started helping students and trying to explain things in a different way. Even by late elementary school, I can remember that. And in middle school, I had a math teacher that asked me to like help in study hall with some students that were struggling with their math and things like that. So I think it was something I was always interested in. I did consider being a dentist for a while and a couple other things, but then
dentist,
I came back.
Yeah,
I don't know how. Yeah, I'd read some, I don't know what. But anyway, so by the time I started college, I knew that teaching was what I wanted to do. But throughout high school, I did a lot of just organic tutoring in at the high school. And then when I went to college, I declared as a education major from the beginning and loved all the classes. I had an on-campus job tutoring in the math lab, and just always liked helping people where figure out where their confusion was and help them, you know, like learn that concept. So I just really liked that. So it was always something that I wanted to do. My grandmother was a teacher, my Grandma Kennedy. Before, she didn't have a four-year degree when she first was teaching because she would have been like much older. But right. So she always had worksheets, mimeographed worksheets in a drawer at her house. So I could play school and things like that.
I was going to say, were you a teaching siblings? Were you a teaching stuffed animals?
Stuffed animals because
You're not the first one that said that.
The siblings were not cooperative.
That can be wrong.
But the stuffed animals were. But no, I always really enjoyed it. I had a lot of, like I said, I loved all my teachers, but I can think of the seventh grade teacher who asked me to help with the math. And
what was
that? Mrs. Buis. Yeah. She's since passed, I know that. But she just helped me realize that this is a natural talent that you have of explaining things and, you know, that help people understand a little bit better. And so I really enjoyed that. And I have heard you say on your other podcasts about everybody remembers their teachers, and it's just so true. And I mean, I can remember every single elementary school teacher,
100%.
many middle school and high school. So when I taught here in the education department, we talked about like it. You just have no idea how influential the role can be and how somebody, you make or break someone's day, you know what I mean? Based on how, like,
you can put someone on a career path based on what you say to someone on like a random Tuesday afternoon, which is a lot.
It's very powerful and influential role. But, and then I had college professors that also inspired me in education. One of them I've tried to track down. I've never been able to find him since to tell him. Yeah. And also had really good, like, writing professors that really gave me really, really helpful feedback, which is nice, like, is really, really beneficial, you know, versus just a grade on a paper or something.
Right. That's fantastic. Yeah, you know, I'm curious. I saw that you taught some special education as well.
Yes.
Was that at the high school level, or was that, what level was that at?
That was at the high school level. And so I taught students with ADHD, with learning disabilities, with intellectual disabilities, with emotional disabilities. The terms have changed over the years from when I was teaching. But
sure.
So I taught at the high school level, and my first master's degree was in compensatory strategy instruction for adolescents with mild disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was offered through University of Illinois at Chicago, but the majority of it was paid for by the federal government because they were trying to get more people who were teaching adolescents with disabilities to teach compensatory strategies so students learned how to manage, you know, like how to still learn with their disability. So, so that was at the high school level. And then when I came here to North Central, I taught, there is one class that the state of Illinois requires for anybody who's going to become a teacher about teaching students with identified disabilities in the general ed classroom. So that's required to be a teacher in Illinois. So I taught that, I think, every term from 1997 to 2014 here. And it was a passion of mine, because if any student needs a teacher that can effectively teach, it's the students who struggle with learning. So, you know, we need teachers who are equipped with the skills and the knowledge to effectively meet their needs. So that, I love teaching that course, that course as well. And I loved getting to know every single education major that, you know, went through our program, because I was the only one teaching that class at the time.
Well, it's interesting that you taught special education at the K-12 level, because we talk about it a lot on the show, or just when I'm interviewing people that work in special education, is that something about that is unique, that kind of reminds me of what you do now in your current role, is that unlike your, you know, ninth grade history teacher or whatever, that in special education, you really do have the opportunity to get to know students at a deeper level over the course of a couple of years, get to know their families over the course of a couple of years. And that's something that you get to do in your current role now too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. That's something I've enjoyed about both of them. And then when, you know, working with students here who the they don't have an IEP when they're in college. It's a little bit different, but
yeah,
students,
yeah, that could be a transition too, right?
So just transitioning that, but to see that they have compensatory strategies that they do achieve, their goal of earning a college degree. And so that's, it's just very rewarding to watch students navigate the whole journey when I watch them walk across the graduation stage and know like what the different points in their journey have been.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. And then hearing about their early career years of how they're doing, like the years go so quickly, it's hard to believe. Like we were just saying,
anymore, Julie. It's frightening. No one wants to hear me say that I'm old or anything either at like 27. No one wants to hear me say that. And I get it. That's fine. But you taught, so you were a high school teacher. And then I think that you briefly mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, that I think you said you had kids. And I think it's been like, what was the transition, the jump from K through 12 to higher ed?
So I was teaching at Argo High School. And then I had my first child. Then I stayed part-time there. And then after I had my second child, I decided I was going to stay at home for a while, but really missed teaching. So sent my resume around. And then that's when I started teaching part-time at North Central. So my kids were very little, I've been here 27 years this month. And, my youngest son wasn't even born when I started here. So my kids spent a lot of time on this campus as young children. But again, my own children often had my students as field experience teachers, know, so my own children had some of my former students as teachers and coaches as they went on through to high school. I think all of them did, had former students of mine. Yes. In fact, one of them joked, told my son, "You're not going to get a grade higher than what your mom gave me."
Which hopefully was an A, I hope so.
But I remember him saying that. So that was fun because I live in the area, so my kids were going to school around here. So like I said, many of their teachers were my former students, and many of my current students were their field experience, teachers in the schools or student teachers. So that was fun and interesting, yes.
There are no borders anymore. Your professional life and your personal life all is merged into one at some point. And so now in your current role, do you get the chance to go into the classroom every once in a while? Do you get to teach classes or not so much anymore? Like, I always find that to be an interesting thing for so many educators that start off as classroom teachers and then make the decision that they want to, make an impact on a larger group of people. But at the same time, that also means that you maybe have to sacrifice a part of the job that you really, really love too. What does it look like? Do you get the chance to scratch that itch every once in a while still, or is it a different kind of satisfaction?
I don't teach any academic courses here on campus anymore. Since I transitioned into this role in 2014, I think I have taught a couple times when they've needed something early on, but the workshops feel very much like teaching to me. So on the day, this coming Wednesday, we'll have Cardinal First Penultimate workshops at 5 consecutive times, which feels like a high school day. So the students, it's one hour for the students,
five
but for
shows
us,
a day.
So that part, and in my planning is very similar to what do I want the students to get out of this 1 hour workshop, and how am I going to know if they got it? What do they need? So it's similar, but it's not the exact same. I do miss, getting to know, getting to see students 3 times a week for a whole semester. Yeah. You just get to know them a little bit differently. So I miss that. But like I said before, I like knowing them for the whole 4 years of their journey. So that part I really enjoy. Like I see the students once a month for their entire experience. So it's a trade-off.
All right, Julie, well, I don't have too many more questions for you. I'll finish you off with just specifically bringing it back to Cardinal First and first-generation students. Is there something about your role with those students and those students' experiences that you think is more important than people realize who have never thought about it, or something you wish more people knew about?
Well, that's a great question. I think that we just don't want to assume that people know things. Like if something's a learned behavior or and nobody's been taught it, then you can't expect somebody to know it. And yeah. In any setting, the same with, like, I have a family member navigating a medical situation right now, and sometimes the people we're talking to assume we know like parts of that field that we don't know because they work in it every day. And so I think
in education, we love our acronyms too. And sometimes it just sounds like a foreign language and you're communicating with people. Yeah.
And to make sure acronyms, like within the campus, within the higher ed setting, and making sure that, you know, would a first year student know this if nobody told them? No. And so let me, like, how can I, you know, make sure that conveying the information that they need.
That was pretty much all I had for. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we didn't talk about?
Well, I think one thing that I would love, as someone who's been teaching for decades, is I wish that I could get a printout once a year with a one sentence update about each of my former students and what they have going on right now.
That's good. Just a quick email once a year. It shouldn't be too hard, right? That would be great.
Fortunately now, since LinkedIn, I stay in touch with a lot of the more recent graduates of the program. But I wonder a lot about the students I taught in high school and that I coached in high school. I'm in touch with a few of them. But I think I've always said that as a teacher, I wish that you could just be like, you wonder how they're doing, and just little updates. So anyway, and I'm not on social media, so I don't get to connect with anybody.
Good
that
for
way.
You, though. I it's probably best for everyone's, you know, mental health. You know.
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, but I'm not on.
There you go.
Not on the other. But no, that I don't think I have.
Well, all the Cardinal First people out here who are listening to that, this is your cue. This is your reminder to email Julie that one sentence. It's just once a year. Now is your time to remember just one sentence. They can do that.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
All right, Julie, that was it. Thank you so much for letting me come by, letting me have my triumphant return to campus.
I know. That's awesome.
It's been fun.
That was Julie Carballo. She is the Assistant Dean of Students for First Generation and Military Affiliated Initiatives at North Central College, and she's also the founding director of Cardinal First. Thanks so much for listening to Teacher's Lounge. As always, feel free to nominate a teacher in your life to be on the show. It's how we get all of our great guests like Julie. You can send them our way to teacherslounge@niu.edu. And please do continue to send your story ideas so we can keep bringing you the best education coverage possible. And wherever you're hearing the podcast, please do consider subscribing, leaving a rating, or sharing with a friend. It's the best way to get even more perspectives on the show. You can subscribe to the Teacher's Lounge newsletter to keep up to date with everything going on with the show. You can find a link to do that on this episode's page over at WNIJ.org. And a big thank you to the Northern Illinois band Kind Ofs for the music that you hear each and every episode of this show. I've been your host, Peter Medlin, and we'll be back with even more Teacher's Lounge very soon. See ya.